With no further ado, let's get right to our very special guest line, where we are joined by my friend, Governor Jared Polis of Colorado, the man who I am told is not wearing blue shoes today. Jared, it's been days since I've talked to you. Good to talk to you again.
Home state of KOA. That's Ross's home station, for those of you who are listening. So putting in a plug. If you're how many megawatt is that?
Powerful 50,000 watts, the blowtorch of the Rockies.
That's right.
That's the home station, KOA, which, by the way, stands for King of Agriculture, and I think it's 100 years old next year. All right, let's talk something else. I saw that you and a few other governors, I think they're all Democrats, wrote a letter to the Biden administration, or to a subset of the Biden administration, about reclassification of marijuana. So can you please lay out this issue for us?
Yeah, so absolutely. But 38 states now, Democratic and Republican states, have some form of legal marijuana, medicinal, limited. Colorado, obviously, is full, you know, full hog. It's available recreationally. We say, you know, regulate marijuana like alcohol. But 38 states have some form of way that people acquire. But the federal government still has it classified in a way where there is no allowable therapeutic use, recreational use, anything in the classification of the drug. What does that mean? It means in states that have it, there's businesses that follow the state law and sell it, but they're taxed at way too high a rate. Effectively, rather than having the normal corporate tax, many of them pay 70-80% tax because they can't deduct the cost of goods sold because marijuana is not scheduled in a way that allows it to have any legal use under federal taxing authority. Now, again, I support, you know, this full federal legalization. This is not that. This is Jane, simply reclassify it, which is a step that the administration can take to allow for tax deductions for businesses that follow state law.
And I don't know if it's still 100% true, but it certainly used to be true that the fact that this was on Schedule One meant that the businesses that were in this industry couldn't open bank accounts, and they had to somehow transport and control and protect like tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash, which poses all kinds of risks as well. Is that still an issue?
It's still the general truth, right? There's a few banks that are willing to take that risk. Most aren't. So, yes, there's too much cash in the business, which is dangerous for everyone. There's no advantage to that. It can lead to theft. In some cases, it's led to assault. It's a dangerous to have. We need to clarify that just like any other legal business, regardless of whether you think marijuana should be legal in your state or not, in states that have it, it should be part of the banking system like any other business.
So one of the other things that I want to just make sure we all understand here is that the DEA relies at least a little bit on what they are told by the Department of Health and Human Services about which schedule a drug should be on, right, if any. And my understanding is that there's already been some of that, and the DEA has already been told that there are potential medical benefits for marijuana, and everybody knows that anyway, and that shouldn't be on Schedule One. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, exactly. So from the health perspective, and again, you know, whether you feel like it should be legal for recreational or not, it absolutely has its role. And we know, you know, chemotherapy patients who use it for appetite stimulation, a number of other things that seniors and others have used it therapeutically. But under Schedule One, there's it basically states there's no accepted therapeutic use at all. So, I mean, even opioids have a therapeutic use under prescription. Obviously, marijuana is not nearly as dangerous or addictive as opioids. So it's simply a recognition of the scientific facts. So coming out of the fact-based agency, that's the recommendation. But the DEA needs to act.
What's taking so long?
I don't know. Search me. I think this should have been done 5, 10 years ago. Now, part of the problem is while marijuana was illegal, it's been hard to have the research that was needed to be able to make the case based on data. But there's now a sufficient body of research to do this. I mean, I don't think it even goes too far out on a limb. There's plenty of background. But the only legitimate reason, and again, I think this should have happened 5 or 10 years ago, is that it took a while for the research to catch up with the reality because of the chicken and the egg. I mean, you couldn't get university or academic funded research because they couldn't touch the stuff. So I think we're getting through that, and there's enough data there to support this reclassification.
I'm a libertarian, so I've never touched marijuana. I've never tried marijuana. I've never tried a cigarette, but I'm in favor of legalization for for adults. And I get a little bit frustrated, I suppose, with Republicans in the House and Senate trying to block this thing. I thought we had a federal system. I actually don't think there's any role for the federal government in regulating drugs. I thought Antonin Scalia's worst decision was the Reich case, where he basically gave the feds control over homegrown marijuana. But it seems to me there's a little bit of some of these folks in Congress hoping that they're going to stick the genie back in the bottle and make marijuana illegal again at the state level.
Yeah, look, I mean, there are absolutely libertarian-minded Republicans and members of Congress that fully support this, but there are also kind of stodgy nanny state Republicans who want to control what everybody does. And I mean, you know, there are, while Democrats are generally more pro-legalization, there's absolutely some that are not. It's not really a partisan issue. And even if you look at how it breaks down in the states, there's red states, blue states, where with different levels of legalization. But I think at the end of the day, this should be a matter of personal responsibility and decision making. And that's what Colorado's chosen. And we're just saying, let the federal government respect federalism. I mean, every state doesn't have to choose to do it, but for those who do, get the federal government out of the way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're talking with Jared Polis. He is Democrat, governor of Colorado. Let me switch gears with you for just 3 or 4 minutes here. So you gave, I don't know if it's at a press conference or what, but you made an announcement today that your staff has called a bold vision for housing and transit in Colorado. And most of the folks listening to us right now are not in Colorado, but there's a couple aspects of this that I want to talk about because they might apply on a nationwide basis to a lot of places that are having these issues, okay? So the first thing I want to ask you about is mass transit. You talk in this, your vision about mass transit, and I've always been kind of skeptical that the state can nudge people to want to take the bus or the train. What do you have to say about that? And am I misreading kind of where you're trying to go?
Yeah, it's just about the opportunity to take the bus or train. Absolutely, some people want to live, have some acreage, live further out, commute. It's perfectly fine decision if you want to drive your car to work, but the average commuting costs in Colorado are about $1,800 of gas. That's about the average. What we want to do is have more opportunities to either live closer to where people work or to have the transit that gets people where they want to go, who choose to take transit because it's more convenient, because it's lower cost. You have to have that as an opportunity. You've probably been to many cities in the country and other countries in the world that have a system that works. Colorado isn't quite there. We want to help get it there. It's a matter of, again, choices for people to make. And without transit, people don't have the opportunity to make that choice.
Not just a Colorado thing, but a lot of places saw, I mean, I realize COVID was an exceptional situation, but have seen even before that mass transit systems, buses, trains, are big losers financially and end up needing to be subsidized by the taxpayer. Are you fine with that? Like, would you increase mass transit even if it means that the state needs to spend more money because it's not covered by ticket sales? Riders?
What you want to do, if you're talking about this from kind of the macroeconomic perspective, is just look at the all-in cost. So again, average commuting costs, and you know, this is just based on data and mileage, about $1,800. That's a $3 a gallon. We're below that a little bit now in Colorado. But what is the all-in cost if people choose to commute a different way, regardless of who pays for it, right? Because I mean, whether you're paying for it through your taxes or whether you're paying through it for a fare, you are paying for it. But is it, you know, is there an opportunity for people to reduce their commuting costs to $1,000 instead of $1,800 if we have this in place? So it can only happen. Transit-oriented development is part of that. Removing barriers to housing, making it easier to build homes, especially near transit, but frankly, removing red tape and improving turnaround times and approval processes across the state is also part of this goal to make Colorado more affordable.
All right. So I got one comment and then one last question. So my comment to what you just said is, it's not the same whether I decide to spend $1,800 on gas or you decide to make me spend $1,800 more in taxes to pay for uneconomic buses. There's a moral difference there, and it's not just
the
dollars.
Real quickly, everybody who wants to commute in a car can, but there's just costs and inconveniences associated with that. Not everybody wants to. Maybe right now, by default, in our state,
yeah,
we don't have a lot of those transit options. People who don't want to are still doing that. So we're just again, it's all about options and choices.
Okay, so I got, I think, one minute left with you.
Sure.
Here. And there are a lot of aspects in which some of us here in Colorado feel like it's turning into California. One way we don't want it to turn into California, even though it's drifted in that direction, is real estate prices that are unaffordable to so many people. And yes, Colorado has gotten much more expensive. In 1 minute, give me like your top couple of bullet points of you think things the state can do to try to make housing more affordable, especially things that don't involve my paying for someone else's housing.
Shout out to Governor Gianforte in Montana, Republican. He got a lot of this done. Effectively, we want to remove regulatory barriers to make it easier to build homes, whether it's an accessory dwelling unit on your property, whether it's a quicker path to get a multifamily project approved, whether it's a duplex or triplex. It's how do we prevent government regulations from adding time and cost to building homes, which is the status quo, which contributes to cost. It's not the entire problem. I mean, you look at something like mortgage interest rates out of the hands of any state. They're higher now, no matter, you know, how you – financing simply costs more. But removing some of those costs is key. And so that's really the focus of what we're talking about here, working with local, state, federal, anywhere we can reduce the costs by streamlining the regulations. That can help contribute to more housing that people can afford.
Governor Jared Polis of Colorado. I'm about 2 hours early, but happy Hanukkah, my friend.
Thank you. Happy Hanukkah, Ross.